Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
And we are currently in the Conjuring House.
The Differous.
I am Madison Timmons.
I'm Chris Susi.
And we're paranormal specialists who live in the most haunted city on Earth, Savannah, Georgia. Every day is Halloween in our line of work, so join us as we spin true tales of haunts, murders, and disturbing Savannah history. I'm Madison.
I'm Chris.
And welcome to the most haunted city on Earth. Hello, and welcome to a very special, if you will, edition of the most haunted city on Earth. My name is Madison Timmons.
And I'm Chris Susi.
And we are very tired. We have been in the Conjuring House, and we are currently in the Conjuring House at
5:45 in the morning.
5:47.
5:47 in the morning. And we've been here since 7
p.m.
We have had a night. Quite a investigation. We were joined by the Ghost Brothers for the first portion of the night, for the majority of the night, really.
Yeah, until the last couple hours.
The last couple hours when all hell broke loose.
Let me just put it this way, y'all. First off, if you haven't finished our deep dive into the Conjuring House, go listen to that.
Yes.
Because a lot of things will make sense.
Absolutely. And upcoming will be a lot of content about the evening that we spent here, so you'll want to watch the episodes
breakdown
leading up into it. You'll want to watch this episode so that you'll understand that we had like a night and day kind of experience going on here at the Conjuring House. We had almost friendly kind of banter environment going on. There's lots of laughter. We were having a good time. And then it got very dark and very scary. And we're hoping, because it got to the point at which it was scary in a way that we're hoping to have footage that kind of, at the very least, shows how
frightening this house
reactive we became in the middle of it all. So, as of right now, we're not sure we have that footage, because it was kind of harrowing.
Yeah.
Did so many innovative things, like we've brought a 360 camera allowing people to actually experience a ghost hunt. You can actually do the 360 with goggles or just, you know, moving it around with your phone, but you can drop into this environment, and we are giving you an opportunity to be in the Conjuring House late at night all alone.
It's, I just want to put it this way for y'all. When I said in the one of the episodes that Mr. Kenyon told Roger, if you value your family, you'll keep the lights on. That is so unbelievably true.
Yeah, it's fascinating when you think that the warning was keep all the lights on. And one of the most harrowing experiences at night were when we decided to turn the lights off.
It was the most jarring thing.
It was very jarring.
Well, okay, so let's start out with the beginning of the night.
Yes.
So we arrived at 7 o'clock. We signed all our paperwork. We were met by one of the staff of the Conjuring House. Once the Ghost Brothers had arrived as well, he took us around the house to give us our bearings, essentially. He gave us a very brief history of the house, or like little things that people have experienced in the house and things like that, like from investigations and new information they've found about the history. But it was very brief in the scheme of things.
And it was really more to
orient
and let us know the stance of the Conjuring House itself.
That's true.
The Conjuring House is not promoting the movie, the Conjuring movie. They're not promoting anything outside of the history that they've been able to either research or get directly from sources, such as Andrea Perrin, who has worked with this organization, apparently. Her book is in the library here, mm-hmm. and apparently they sell it at the gift shop here. So really, I think the message that they really wanted us to walk away with was, don't sensationalize the place. Mm-hmm. You know, try to keep it within all of the rules and everything regarding what they actually have, you know, in print and what they actually know. And what was interesting was, I don't think he said anything save the name of the boy that we didn't know, mm-hmm. that we had not already researched
right.
on our own, found out on our own.
He basically informed us, Oliver was the name that the Perrin girls gave the little boy.
Yeah, they had discovered it through stories and, mm-hmm. you know, that a little boy named Oliver had drowned on the property.
Right.
According to what they had learned.
And so they came to find out that his name was actually Henry. Henry was not very active tonight.
Although it's possible we saw him.
Yes. So there was a moment. So, we'll get to that. So basically, after we do our tour, we sit down with the Ghost Brothers. We go over everything that we want to accomplish for the night, and we start setting up everything. And I think one of the first important experiences we had was when Chris, Megan, Debria, and myself all went down into the cellar.
Yes.
For the first time. Now, there are two staircases that lead down to the cellar. So we had gone down one flight, and we were, Debria and Megan were standing in the middle of the cellar, and then I was all the way at the far end of it for the most part. And Chris was over by where one of the turns were from the steps. And we all heard what sounded like somebody coming down the steps. This house is not subtle.
No.
By any means.
Crickety, crackety, crickety, crackety.
Like, you can hear everything in this house. So we heard these footsteps, and we were assuming it was JT. We were wrong. So we hear this, and then Chris turns around to see if JT was there, and
right.
instead...
Fully expecting just JT to come around, because we'd heard, bomb, 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 footstep, 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 mm-hmm. you know, without any reason to doubt that it was a solid flesh and blood person, only a few feet behind me, really.
Right. And then immediately, we all see this shadowy figure dart, and we hear the...
Yeah, the footfalls run right past us.
Over towards the well. Debria screeches, of course, and we were all very alarmed because
yes.
it was, we weren't even like really fully hunting at this point. We were just kind of still
oriented. We were avoiding the Ghost Brothers because the Ghost Brothers wanted to film their intro
mm-hmm. exactly.
for their video. And so we were just trying to, you know, be out of their way.
Right. And so we then realized that the lights over by the steps that we knew were on were out at this point.
Yes, and that was a strange thing too, because we had walked under the lights,
mm-hmm.
and the fact that we didn't use a flashlight or anything to get to that point tells you that the lights were on.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And we went back later, and Chris realized the light bulbs had been unscrewed. And we had to screw them back into place for the lights to come back on. So something had to unscrew those before making its appearance. So that was the first alarming incident. Now, we did have some other experiences that were not as, like, intense, if you will.
No.
I will say, this house is very chaotic in its energy. There's a lot of spirits going on in it. And at times, I think we were communicating, because we did a ton of Estes methods as well. We
Probably all ended the most up, amounts of Estes methods.
We all ended up doing them. And so I think we ended up communicating with a bunch of different spirits that may not even be associated with the house in any capacity, in the way that we understand it. I do think that the house in general does sit on some type of a portal or some kind of
the veil. Land, yeah, thins the veil, something fierce.
Something of that nature. The logic was that I came into it was that because of all the activity seeming to come from the cellar, I don't think the portal is in the cellar, though. Mm-mm. Because to be quite honest, this first floor is the most active, in my opinion.
From what we've experienced.
From what we have experienced. The cellar definitely has things down there. The guide explained to us, you know, there's a trickster spirit down here, and
that was kind of a new one too, a bent neck man.
Yes.
Which was not something that we were familiar with, but
with this house at
we
least.
Kind of understand the trickster spirit. And if there is a spirit that is easily identifiable, a mimic spirit, a spirit that pretends to be that spirit, is notable, and mm-hmm. and you know we should absolutely suggest, and I know we have talked about this a lot on our podcast, which is that spirits crave recognition. So if you're going to recognize the bent neck person, then appearing as a bent neck person gives you street cred, right? You know, mm-hmm. it makes people pay attention to you and give you, you know, some credence.
But like, we did a couple of different, I personally went down there three different occasions to do different things. At one point, Megan, Debria, and I went down there for what we have now referred to as estrogen Estes.
The estrogen Estes.
Just the girlies. And we went down there. And it was super boring, I'm not gonna lie. It was very, very boring. The only thing that really was happening is we set up two K2 meters on either side of the table they have down there. And one would go beep a doop beep a doop doop, and then all of a sudden that would go out, and then the other one would go beep a doop beep a doop doop, and they would just do that back and forth for a while. And then when Dalen and I went down there, to do like our portion of just us two in that lower portion, it just felt like something down there was just trying to throw us every random thing you could think of. And I was like, okay, this is annoying now. So do I think it's the most active? No. There was at one point where it was like there are 12 spirits down there or something like that, because we did the
Estes. Yeah.
But who knows if that's actually the case or not. We did find out interesting information while we were down there, because Chris had tested while I was doing the Estes. I was in the mask and the headphones. Chris had tested using a flashlight while we were apparently getting direct communication and seeing how it affects the spirits. They didn't like it.
They did not like it. And it was more just trying to figure out where the spirit was standing. So mm-hmm. I was using the flashlight to say, when the light is on you, you know, let us know. Tell us when the light touches you. And the response we got was, it hurts, and don't do that, and stop. And it was very clear while I was doing it that there was an area where when the light went over that area, it was like, don't do that, stop. I don't like it, you know, stop it. And it's like, oh, it sounds like the light hurts this spirit, mm-hmm. Which does actually come up a little later in the story.
And so we did that. Then there were portions where we went into the library and we were getting a lot of really interesting direct responses from the Estes methods in there. pretty much every room we investigated in, at least one person's SC method had direct responses.
Yes.
There was also some interesting things that came up as well. When we were in the room where the seance happened, so if you remember that Ed and Lorraine Warren conducted a seance with Carolyn and Roger Perrin, the seance, first off, the Conjuring House says that it was never properly closed.
Right.
So that's problematic. This was also the room where Carolyn Perrin literally got yeeted across the house. Problematic. And so the weirdest thing that happened in that room, for the Essie's methods, I would say at least, was Daylin at one point was exactly explaining, and mind you, when you're in the Essie's method, you don't know what's happening. And everybody agreed they could not hear, they did not know what questions were being asked. And at one point, without being prompted at all, he started mentioning a woman that hanged herself in the barn.
Right.
And deaded herself. That's right. The word.
She deaded herself.
She deaded herself, which is very TikTok friendly. But
and what's
I don't
even
think
more intriguing about this is this was after we had gotten very express directions to go to the barn.
All night.
All night. We were being told to go outside. We were being told to go to the barn. We were getting this through these direct conversations. Something wanted us to go out to the barn. And the thing to know is that in December of last year, the barn caught on fire, that there was a combustion of oil rags that caused a fire in the barn. And so the barn is actually closed. You can't go into the barn anymore. But even that came up in these sessions, setting fire, combustion. The word combustion came up. The building that burned was the one that they wanted us to go to. So we found ourselves pretty consistently being sort of lured to the barn.
We were also outside, or we were also doing a session at one point, and it was telling us, look up, go outside, follow me, follow me. And so we ended up deciding, oh, they want us to go outside. And so Chris and I walked outside, and we were like, look up, look up. And so we remembered Andrea Perrin had mentioned, you know, these extraterrestrial type encounters. Galactic family that she was experiencing. And that she would see triangles in the sky and things like that. And so we went out to the field and started looking up to see if, like, maybe it's trying to say, like, oh, they're here or whatever it would be. But the weird part was we were out in, if we decided, well, let's just go down into the field where the bodies are, because they eventually, a while back, brought ground-penetrating radar to look for the bodies for the 7 dead soldiers buried in the wall. And they found 5 of them, and they marked them, those bodies, with flags. So we were over by there, and Chris is explaining to the camera. And while he's explaining, I look up back at the house, and I'm looking. There's 2 windows on this side of the house. And on the upper floor, I see on the right window a little boy looking out at us. And I was like, oh, that must be Oliver Henry. And I see him staring at us, and then he goes back into the room towards where the Ghost Brothers were. And apparently while we were out there, the Ghost Brothers were having experiences where I believe it was Jawan had an experience. So he thought he saw a little boy pass by him.
Or a shadow figure that was the size of a little boy.
Yeah. And they were also hearing like footsteps and things like that. And so that was an interesting encounter as well. But at one point, Chris and JT were like, we should go out to the barn to go see why they're asking us to come out to the barn.
Right. We were prompted very clearly through an Estes method that we were requested at the barn. They wanted us at the barn. It was so clear the intent of that session. And we thought everyone was going to come with us.
No.
But it was very chilly.
It's okay. I do want to preface y'all. I am, and I mentioned this on the live stream a lot, I'm a furnace of a human being. I am always warm. I am always just boiling alive internally. I have really weird temperature control issues. And so very rarely am I frigid. I have been, from the moment we entered this home, chilled to my bones, like to the point where everybody else is like, I'm sweating, like peeling off layers. I'm over here like, I can't put on more layers. I'm so cold. So I did not want to go outside. I was like, please, no, I don't need to be cold anymore. And so that was when Megan, Debria, and I decided to go down to the cellar. And it was just JT and Chris. And so would you like to explain what happened to y'all?
So we decide that we're going out to the barn. And we can't go into the barn because it had caught on fire, so it's not safe to go inside. But we could go to the outside of the barn. The barn actually sits right on the road and is the entry point onto the property. So you have to drive right by it to get into the property. There's a fence that, you know, no trespassers fence. So we're walking and we're looking at the barn and we're just kind of having a very even-keeled experience. And that was something that was going on all night. It was very even-keeled. There was nothing alarming. There was nothing, you know, out of the ordinary. It was a typical ghost hunt in a lot of ways, because something that you just can't express enough, ghost hunts do not generally have big explosive moments. You don't usually get, you know, these incredible things. And when you do, because of their rarity, you can't really present it in a way that makes it seem like it wasn't contrived. But this was not contrived at all. We were walking up to the front of the barn. We're getting a picture, video of the front of the barn, which is all boarded up, and you can see where the smoke and the fire damage had happened to the wood. We're sitting there, we're looking at it. I had actually just turned my camera on, luckily, because we'll be able to share this, because we've only listened to it back many times by now. We're looking at the barn, and behind us, I'm talking maybe 20 feet behind us, we hear three distinct beats on a drum. Boom, boom, boom. Unmistakably a drum.
We have our doubts. We can't say, oh, by the way, the Conjuring House barn. No way.
No way.
That was like drums.
I just literally got, no, that was three. And I just got the freakiest, absolutely not. I don't know if y'all heard that. Yeah. But what mics do we have rolling?
Crazy.
Holy crap.
Crazy chills.
I got crazy chills.
Yeah,
I
my
got
spine.
Crazy chills.
Straight
down
up my
spine.
Now,
I'm not sure if y'all heard that.
That was definitely three bangs on what sounded like a Native American drum. This was the site of a Native American slaughter.
I've never been so scared.
So let's mosey this way.
I've never been so scared. That was so clear. That was so clear. Did y'all hear that?
And it was so loud and so close, and we just froze. And I had the most devastating chill down my back. It was enough to make me really get into that fight or flight situation. Like, my hackles were up. I was prepared to fight or die. And we looked around and there was nothing anywhere near us. No one, nothing. We had our lights out, scanning all over. It sounded like Native American drums. And it was three hits. Now, for those people who watch the Conjuring movie or know anything about it, there's a lot of talk about the three knocks, that there's a three knocks, and how Ed Warren believed that the three knocks were indicative of demonic presence because it was mocking the Holy Trinity to have these three knocks at that very, very sound interval. Boom, boom, boom.
So loud that even the Parajunkies on the live stream heard it.
Yes, they heard it. we have it on our video, and we're going to isolate it and listen to it again. It was very harrowing sound, and this was the first direct experience that JT had ever had with the paranormal. Mm-hmm. He had always experienced it through the lens of other people's experiences, but something kind of took hold of JT, a sensation, a feeling, a panic even. And he began to have what I would typify as shock. He would say, I can't catch my breath. I can't catch my breath. Because it was so mind-warping to have something like that happen and so undeniable mm-hmm. in its presence in his mind. But he was really much more affected than I thought he was, to the point at which shortly thereafter he's like my stomach is stinging. The skin on his stomach was stinging. Now we're in January weather in Rhode Island, so he is wearing 3 to 4 layers of clothing, a coat, a sweater, an undershirt, and he is bundled. But he has a scratch across his abdomen.
And a bruise.
And a bruise under, and if you looked at it, it kind of looked like something went and mm-hmm. just grabbed him. So now we have this very unique experience because it seemed to be physically after JT. And the interesting thing was earlier tonight, we had an Estes method where it seemed like the spirit was very honing in on mm-hmm. JT, called him by his name, talked about his height, talked about all kinds of various details about JT. And I was like, that's kind of funny. Mm-hmm. You know, and it was a ha-ha moment when it was happening. But in retrospect, it seemed like the spirit had already latched onto him. So from that moment forward, JT was having a different night. Mm-hmm. It went from being a night of kind of the bravado that comes from never having experienced anything to a night of being cautious about how to proceed if there's a supernatural threat. Mm-hmm. And that was an amazing change. It was a very big flip of the coin. Like for anybody who has been following us, we have been having a lot of fun with Debria in sort of setting her up to go and sit alone in the dark. Mostly because her reactions are genuine and hilarious and wondrous, but Madison and I have always held to the idea that, of course, we would not force her. Mm-hmm. That would not be right. We would, of course, always allow her a way out. But Debria was game, and we're playing it up, we're yucking it up. But the thing about it, of course, is we stand as people who know that there's such a thing as supernatural threat. And we don't want to take it so lightly that it seems like we don't care about supernatural threat. But if we broach the subject with JT, he kind of was like, nah, you know, it'll be fine, it's so funny, this is going to be great. Which again, yes, I'd say 90% yes. But if you don't reserve some of that for the fact that we are trying to be, you know, experts in that field, yeah, we have to admit, it could be psychologically stressing to a person to put them in that situation. JT came back from the barn and almost immediately told Debria she didn't have to go down into the basement. Mm-hmm. He knew for the first time in his life that there's a chance, an outside chance, that something that is out of our control could happen. And that is an immense thing. That's something that happened this evening. If you're a longtime listener, you know that our fans are called para-junkies. And that came from a term, like in one of our first podcasts, mm-hmm. we talk about your first big paranormal experience is like heroin. When it happens, you spend almost the rest of your life looking to achieve that same high again. Well, it turned out that JT had his first hit of ghost heroin tonight. And is now, I think, as we go forward, it'll be a very interesting journey because he's going to be rectifying the fact that he had these experiences. But here's the thing. The scratch, the barn, I'm not even going to say that was the scariest thing that happened to him tonight.
No. So he was very jarred by that. He immediately came back in and he was like, you guys don't need to be going over by that barn. We did. But regardless, which he was right. We should
he was
have,
right.
We should have done that. Because I was curious at this point to see what, you know, we were up against, if you will. Again, that lack of fear, especially because of the fact that everything else throughout the night has been very tame, in my opinion.
Yes.
And y'all know, when it comes to paranormal stuff, I don't scare easily. I have been around spirits my entire life. I've seen spirits my entire life. They don't scare me very easily. By the end of tonight, I'm actually genuinely frightened to the point, which is why we are filming this at the end of our investigation in the dining room, because I don't want to go down in the cellar tonight because I am so jarred by what we witnessed. So later that night, after the Ghost Brothers had left, after they had wrapped up everything they needed to get, we obviously were trying to stick it out. So Chris, Megan, myself, and Debria decided we were going to take another walk over to the barn. Well, we were heading back towards the house, and Chris brought his digital camera to take photos. And there was a point where he was trying to take photos and his flash was not working.
It just wouldn't go off. The camera basically froze.
Yeah.
But it was a mechanical thing, so it didn't make any sense that it would.
And so I was holding the flashlight at this point. Chris had been holding the flashlight up until that point, but I had it now because he was trying to take the photos.
I ended up dropping my phone trying to fix my camera.
Yeah.
And I dropped my flashlight, yeah.
And so I had the flashlight, and I was flashing around, you know, just looking, because I can't explain to you how much the darkness here eats light.
Yes. These are powerful flashlights. These are those commercial flashlights where they turn the light on, mm-hmm. and it's like, daytime, nighttime.
Literally. And it was just the darkness was consuming any bit of light out there. And so I was flashing the light around because I was like, this is so weird. And suddenly my flashlight hit eyes. I thought we're in Rhode Island. Could be a fox. Could be some kind of little creature of sorts. I then look, and this creature was not an animal by any means. It looked like the rake. It was on all fours. It had a spine that was very distended down its back, hunched over, and it was staring directly at me. And of course, I didn't want to freak everybody else out, but I go, oh no. And I was like, there is something over there that looks like a skinwalker. Let us move forward. And I was like, don't run, but move with haste.
And I had thought I had caught sight of it, because what I saw, and it was just like a fleeting moment, seemed like sort of a hunched over person, but it was white. But I knew that there was snow on the ground in the woods in the path further down, and I there were weird lawn chairs out there too. So I was like, maybe that's what I saw. But when Maddie started reacting to seeing something, I was like, oh no, that might have been, because I thought it was like a humanoid, like a person standing, but it was also just the faintest glimpse of something just out of my like ability to categorize it with my eyes.
And I know some of you who are listening to this are probably like, oh, you're tired, you're just seeing things. No, I know what I saw, because something I noted while we were walking to the barn was like, man, I feel like something is staring me down right now. Like, I feel like I can feel the eyes on me. And yeah, like, if you've ever had that experience, it's a very distinct feeling. And I was like, that's so weird, like very menacing feeling. And then when that happened, I was like, I'm nervous now. Now I feel like I can't leave this house at night because whatever's out there knows we are here now, which is really an unnerving experience to be in. But what we didn't realize, there are things inside the house as well that are equally as unnerving.
So we hunkered down inside the house after this experience. And an interesting thing is we got into the house, and once we got into the house, I was having a hard time actually closing the door. Mm-hmm. Every time I closed it, it popped back open. And so I was like trying to fiddle with it, but every time I closed it, it popped back open. And I didn't note that as too strange, but when I finally got it closed, I was like, okay, that was weird. And we decided to actually turn out the lights, mm-hmm. which at the top of the list of things you shouldn't do, according to the former owner of the building, is turn out the lights, leave the lights on. So we decided to turn out the lights because we're trying to get some EVPs. We want a little electric voice phenomenon. And we thought by turning out all the lights and sitting in the dark, we might hear things that we wouldn't normally hear, or you know, by depriving our sight, we could hear better, or whatever it was we were trying to do. We were sitting in the dark, and we had sat there for a while, mm-hmm. but it was getting weird. We were having all kinds of notions of movement. There was a little library beside us, and Madison had seen something, and I definitely felt as if there were things just moving around in the dark. And you could chalk that up to imagination to a certain degree, right. but there was a moment where we were finally like, look, there is definitely something moving. And Madison actually saw whatever it was moving around and behind us. So JT has Debria turn the light on our, we have a live stream going, turn the light on the live stream. When the light goes on, JT sees his first full body apparition, solid apparition. It was a woman in mid lurch standing behind us. Because JT was facing me, Megan, and Madison on the couch, and he was seeing into the room behind us where it looked like a woman was lurching, and she was horribly demented to him, and he could describe her, mm-hmm. the color of her hair, the color of her dress. He saw her so solidly that he screamed. Mm-hmm. And of course, when he screamed, and this is a truth of all ghost hunts everywhere, mm-hmm. when one person screams, everyone screams.
Megan dove into the couch.
Megan dove into the couch. I jumped up in a wild, concerted, like, I guess we're fighting now, kind of situation, because I had no idea what he was screaming at, where he was, what was happening to him. I wasn't even sure if it was on him or if he was,
got hurt by something.
Yes, that's exactly it. We weren't sure if he was getting hit or hurt or what, but his reaction did finally push us all to look into that room, and he...
Freaked out,
and he had such a sincere and passionate response, visceral response, mm-hmm. to this event. And I can honestly say, I don't think JT's ever going to be the same again. Mm-hmm. Because, again, when you talk theories, and when you talk things, and when you look at other people's photographs, and when you hear other people talk about seeing ghosts, you're categorizing it from your standpoint, from your viewpoint, which is, well, I've never seen a ghost, so that must have been weird, or that must have been scared. But now JT has this in his arsenal, this sensation. And I can honestly say that that moment was so powerful. I dare say it took the energy of the house, the entire energy of the house, to manifest that moment. And while in the aftermath, we were very skittish, mm-hmm. and we were very nervous, I'd say that all the energy of the house was gone.
Yeah.
Because it did everything in its power for that moment. Mm-hmm. And it was an intense moment. And I think it's going to be a moment that we'll talk about for years and years to come on this podcast, mm-hmm. because it is the first time JT had ghost heroin.
It was such an alarming moment that we were all afraid to split up after that point.
We were huddled together. And it was also, I don't know how many of you are frequent listeners, but JT has a laissez-faire about ghosts. He's got a lot of bravado and earned bravado. It's not, you know, just bravado for bravado's sake. He has faith, and he has a system of belief that has served him 30 years of his life. Mm-hmm. And on his 30th birthday, he was introduced to something that felt one step outside of his faith or his faith's ability to cover him. And I think that, you know, that's remarkable. You don't you don't get to witness something like that every day. Someone facing something that they're now going to have to make room for in their faith arsenal. Mm-hmm. So it was an incredible moment, and it was a terrifying moment. And I think that we will definitely be touching upon this from here on out. And you know, we already have our next investigation lined up.
And Waverly Hills, an even bigger location,
darker histories. So we're excited to see where this goes, because I've been doing this since I was 6 years old. Maddie's been doing this all her life. So our approaches do kind of come down to I have all of this experience to level against this moment. So it's fascinating to watch DeBria and JT and even Megan, although Megan is still untouched, thank God, to watch them experience something that the best we can do is say, what you're going through is normal. What you're going through is it's not as end of the world as it might feel. But I do think that this trip is a defining one.
It's one of the most jarring places and confusing places, because it's like, I mean, if y'all listen to the podcast, you know we are very well read in this field, and it's a passion of ours. So it's very rare when I encounter a haunted location that confuses me.
It's very
in the
confusing.
Way that it's behaving. Yeah. This house, I feel like we only scratch the very surface of. And I don't love how negative some of the entities are within the area of this house. Mm-hmm. I know that Andrea Perrin feels very fondly of this home, and I don't want to come at this of being like, this is a demonic house. I don't necessarily want to go down that path. I'm just saying there are things here that make me weary.
Well, and there are energies here that we are fairly certain contribute to any spirit you bring here. Because one of the first things we heard in the very first Estes method that we attempted was, I've only just arrived. When we asked the spirit how long they had been there, they said they had only just arrived. And we were like, well, did you come with us? Did you come with the Ghost Brothers? Yeah, we were trying to figure out where the spirit comes from. And there's the ever so slightest chance it came with JT. There's JT's spirit. And this place gave that spirit enough energy to present itself. Because there's a lot of interesting things. There's a lot of talk of protection. There's a lot of talk about the things outside and keeping the things outside, or telling us to go outside because something was outside. And so in almost every Estes session, at some point,
Something told us
to go outside or go away, get out.
Yes.
We were
warning
told to
us.
Leave, go away, it's coming. There was an it's coming over and over again all night long, leading up to JT going face to face with something that he describes as just horrifying.
It was, there was like a moment where it was like trouble.
It's almost time.
And we're like, what are you talking about? And nothing could give us a clear answer to what this ominous warning was. And of course, we paid a lot of money to be here. We weren't
We're not going anywhere.
We were not heeding these warnings. And so, but it was interesting. It was also interesting that encounter happened during the witching hour.
That's right.
It happened
right at the witching hour.
All of that happened around the witching hour. The Skinwalker situation, JT being scratched, that was...
Right before
midnight.
Well, right at midnight.
Right at midnight, like a couple minutes before midnight. So really just... bizarre and a lot of scheme in the grand scheme of things. And looking back at it, I'm trying to like analyze. It's a lot to process.
Absolutely.
But I do feel like a lot of those Essie's methods, I'm feeling like it was some entity that was outside of the house that was pretending to be other things to lure us outside.
And it seemed like there were arguments going on all night.
Yes.
During the Essie's methods.
Spirits.
Between spirits. Spirits saying, they're going to learn too much. Go away. You know, and those go aways could have been the other spirit telling spirits to go away. There was one spirit that identified itself as a protector. Mm-hmm. But refused to acknowledge what they were protecting, who they were protecting from what, and who they were. So I think that we were dealing with just a very interesting traffic jam of ghosts, all of them trying to reach a goal that was hard for us to imagine. We had no idea what they were trying to achieve.
Also something interesting to note as well, it took us a long time to pull any names out of any spirits.
There were so, not until the witching hour.
Not until the witching hour.
And the witching hour names started just pouring out, and that was even weirder.
It was weird, because it was very generic names, like David.
David and Leslie.
It was...
Or Sheila.
Sheila. Sheila came out. But there was also times that I think the trickster came through, like I think... Hello. good morning, Megan.
Good morning. It's 6:30.
It's 6:30. But yeah, there was a moment where I'm sure we'll include this because I think this actually was during one of the episode we filmed for Dalen's channel, where I think the trickster started messing with Dalen, with Sheila particularly.
Yes.
Because things like she's being a hoe again or something.
Yes, that's right.
And a lot of raunchiness.
A lot of raunchy language and raunchiness for Dalen there. And we'll be doing more deep dives, but we wanted to get one out in the Conjuring House. We're actually in the Conjuring House.
Even though we are very sleep deprived.
We are very sleep deprived. And so we are going to sign off.
Yes.
And try to get to a bed. Safely.
Yes, we have our Airbnb waiting for us. And,
merciful Airbnb.
And we made it.
We made it
through the night. Somehow. Despite many close encounters. We were almost a Grave Encounters film.
We were almost a Grave Encounters film.
Man, that is ominous for Waverly Hills. Megan's going to have a great time there. No, you're definitely going.
Megan just announced that she doesn't want to go to Waverly Hills.
It's on camera now. You have to go.
Oh, yeah.
So.
All right. We're signing off.
All right.
Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for joining us in this tired rant, and hopefully it made sense. But with that, stay spooky, y'all.